Welcome, everybody. Another episode of the Worldwide Knicks podcast, episode number 72. It's delayed. Yes, it is. But don't worry. We had a slow start the first half. The second half will be, like the Knicks, better. Well, once again, welcome to the episode. I'm your host, Rafa, from Portugal, with a very rainy day here. And to I will send it to another country where it rains a lot. To Scotland with my pal Alex. How's it going?
What's rain, Raf? I've never heard of that before.
No. No rain in Scotland.
It's fine here. It's just freezing cold. Everybody's got the cold. Everybody's got the flu. Everybody's got a bit of COVID back again. There's been a bit of a delay in the pod because, as we said in previous weeks, life gets in the way. Everybody in my house is ill in some kind of way. Work's been crazy as well. So, yeah, a wee bit of a delay, but I've missed being on chatting Knicks, you know.
Therapy. The therapy session again. Was missed.
Therapy session has begun.
So it was a longer delay. It was a 2-week of games for the Knicks. Not the worst 2 weeks, basically. We won 4 out of 6 games. We beat the Hawks, we beat the Wizards, and the Hornets. In the last back-to-back we had, Wizards-Hornets, we beat for the first time in almost 20 years. We finally got games, back-to-back games, games that went wire-to-wire. So which is, well, very telling as well. How good this team is and how bad we were for many, many years. And we had a loss. We had 2 losses as well with Timberwolves and the Suns. And we have, to me, the win of the weeks against the Heat, that mighty comeback. And apparently, teams decided to crazy a week for the NBA. A lot of comebacks after the Knicks' 21-point deficit turned around. Teams just start losing badly and then turning around. The Celtics did it. The Bucks did it last night as well. So
it just was what, 26 points for the Bucks, I think it was, comeback.
I think it was 26. Yeah. And Twitter, UK Bucks was just going crazy with that one. as he should, like we did with the game against the Heat when we were cursing the team, and then it ended up all right.
Just with UK Bucks, I got a small look through the window of Bucks Twitter, it's not too far removed from what we have with Knicks Twitter. I think we sometimes feel like, oh my god, our for want of a better word, our fan base is toxic, which it definitely has its toxic side, but yeah, other teams have it too, apparently. So, yeah, jeez.
Yeah, it's refreshing. It's refreshing to see other teams being toxic, not only the Knicks, but I think we can still beat them in toxicity. we do have the toxic boys. It's a typical Knicks season. Highs, very lows. This game against the Heat, we had the back-to-back wins. We had a good game against the Hawks. And then we had the game against the Timberwolves, where we were absolutely demolished. And then again, the game against the Suns, when it ended, we almost completed another comeback, a bigger comeback. But then Devin Booker had
an
amazing shot. What was that?
Your favorite, Devin Booker. Remember we had
Devin Booker. Yeah,
not a fan.
I'm not a fan of the antics. Win to prove something. Don't be a bully and then end up getting bullied again. He did it to the Dallas Mavericks, and all ended up laughing at him, dropping him down. Brunson was one of them, and Doncic. It's just win before you be a cocky.
To coin a phrase that we used last week, he has a very punchable face. I can give you that. So
he does.
As much as I love him as a player, He would be my number one. Like, if you had a pick of anybody in the league right now, he'd be
Devin Booker,
right near the top of my list for the Knicks.
Okay. Obviously, to me, was Nikola Jokic, because I like the best player in the world right now. That's a different topic, different conversation. So, roller coaster of a ride. So there were goods and there were bads of the week, obviously. The good. And I have to do this because, I am the RJ Barrett guy on the pod in the world. I'm liking that the closing unit, what we're seeing is that RJ Barrett ends up defending the best player on the other team. He's getting that assignment. And I tweeted out, and especially the game against the Suns, where he didn't have a good offensive game. He wasn't feeling it. When he was went rest to 7 minutes left in the game, I tweeted he's not coming back. He's done for the night because he's not being amazing on offense, and we kind of need that. But he actually came back and played good defense on Devin Booker. That shot is he could have done
it's a miracle shot.
All he could, yeah. It's an amazing shot. It's a good shot. It's those type of shots, you make them consistently, and we know he can do it. Makes a player from a good player, a great player, from to a star.
Yeah,
Devin Booker's that star. It's basically.
Booker had missed all three of his threes up to that point. We know he's
doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know he can hit him. It doesn't matter. Those guys, they can miss a lot of shots, but they will hit it when it counts.
Yeah, that's absolutely. That's the kind of guy we're looking for. You know, when we talk about these big stars coming in, we want a guy that can just step up when the lights are brightest and kind of take over. And
that's exactly it. Yeah, absolutely. That's it. We need a guy who can take those shots consistently and can be. Not a rhythm guy, basically, because what we have is rhythm guys.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't think Randall is the. It's not a knock on Randall, obviously, but I don't think Randall is going to develop into that rhythm. Out of that rhythm guy can make that big shot. He can make big shots, but needs to be in rhythm. Basically, RJ Barrett, I think he's still not that guy consistently. He's proven that he can hit some shots, but he's not the guy consistently. And Brunson, he can hit them, but he can be the guy hitting those shots while initiating the offense, doing everything by himself. So we need that guy who can make those shots. And because Grimes is not the guy who is able to make those shots, any shot right now, poor guy. Josh Hart, he won't shoot it, no matter how open he is. So we need those guys. It doesn't need to be a star, a superstar. Like you were alluding to, but a guy you can trust with taking the shot. And you can see that if the shot isn't falling, for example, the game against the Suns with RJ Barrett, and quickly, to some extent, he wasn't shooting. He was playing well, but he wasn't doing a tremendous job shooting. So they kind of shy from the game, from that big moment. And you need a guy who doesn't matter. He will shoot it. Doesn't matter if he's missing or not, like Jimmy Butler did, and he missed again with the Heat, and Booker hit it. They won't miss. Great guys won't miss every game. But
I mean, I'm sorry. I know Brunson's not had that kind of game winner, buzzer beater type moment for the Knicks, but you know that guy doesn't shy away from the spotlight, so. I've no doubt that he can be that kind of player for the Knicks, but you look around the league at the teams that are competing at the very top and, you know, competing for championships, they have two guys like that. They have three guys like that. You know, one's not enough, you know, and you're totally right in that RJ and Randall are these kind of, you know, maybe when they're playing well, you know, they can be that guy, but it's not consistent. You're not like, Randall's not getting the ball with 8 seconds left in the fourth quarter, and you're thinking, you know, I've total faith in this guy that he's going to do the right thing. He's going to put, you know, he's going to bring the game home. You're like, maybe some nights he will, maybe some nights he won't. You just don't have that confidence in him as a kind of closer.
And you saw it against the game against the Heat, where RJ again didn't have a tremendous offensive game. It was a good offensive game, not a tremendous one like Jalen Brunson had, obviously. But he hit the timely shots we needed. He gave us the lead with that and one. And right, and then he shot an air ball. And right the next play, he hits a three. RJ did in that game and quickly doing well. And Randall, again, he wasn't feeling it, so he shied away from having the ball and having the game because he had a bad game against the Heat. He had a bad game against the Heat. The game plan didn't help him, but they tried it and then they changed it, and it's, I think, why we ended up winning that game against the Heat. But circling back, it's refreshing to see that and especially in the game against the Suns, bringing RJ back to guard Devin Booker, who had a much better second half than the first half, is to me a kudos to RJ's development as a defender again, because we knew him as a capable defender. Last year, we completely lost faith in his defense. And, well, this year he's defending the best player to close the game. Well, where he wasn't even closing games last year many times, because he wasn't doing very well on both ends of the floor. And so, yeah, it was a big positive sign that he's developing again towards the right direction. And again, especially the game against the Heat, where he had some shots, but quickly, and Brunson had the hotter hand, basically. And so he did something we rarely saw RJ ever do, like fighting for rebounds and grabbing those rebounds, actually being active on the boards, giving the team what the team needed. And it was impressive that he can shy away from the offense and help us on other ends. That's to me what the team needs many times. Like, have that guy just to say, okay, I'm here to play the defense, and I'll matter playing defense right here. And he did it, and he dried Jimmy Butler. Probably that tweak of the ankle hurt Jimmy as well, but he was there defending him. Good defense, not losing his man. So it was, to me, it's positive seeing him. Like we say with Randall all the time, it's a sign of development where he can impact the game while he's, even if he's passing the ball subpar level, or he's not hitting shots. If you're able to make the team win without hitting the shots, you're an asset to the team, and you're a guy who we can rely on. And there's a positive.
There's a Tibbsism. You don't have to shoot well to play well, Rafa.
It's true. Yeah. It's when you look at a guy, when you tell me if he's playing well or not by the box score, it says so little. I think of that. I saw something. Obviously, I will follow the Portuguese player, the only Portuguese player ever to play in the NBA. He's playing with the Celtics. And he actually got a few minutes the other night, and he had like 7 points and 10 rebounds, 6 offensive rebounds. And I did not know that but at the end of the game, the Celtics give an award to a player who was impactful, with the most impactful player to the game, with things that the box score don't show. Defense, his intimidation, he's protecting the paint or whatever. And so it's an interesting thing to give the award to these players, because the box score doesn't say anything, doesn't tell at all. Like, so much is Josh Hart does, for example, that doesn't show up at the box score. And so that's important to a team as well. So,
I was going to say, you could name the award after Josh Hart, the Josh Hart Award for doesn't show up in the box score.
Yeah, because you look at the player, and I'm at fault with this as well, looking at if I'm not catching a game live or anything after the next morning, I know, no, he played poorly because RJ only had 12 points and he shot 3 for 10 or 3 for 11. He had a poor game. That says nothing. I mean, we need to understand that the box score doesn't say everything. Tibbs is right on that one. And probably every coach in the league agrees because they all have that player who's not there to score points. They're there to prevent the other team from scoring points. Defense wins games, and it's no.
Yeah, no. I was just going to say, I think Grimes comes under that as well, and you know, because Grimes generally at the start of the game anyway gets the, you know, guarding the opponent's best player type thing, and generally does it admirably. I think the problem with Grimes at the moment is obviously his shot is not falling. And at the start of the season, I think he got a bit of hype. Over the off-season, he got a bit of hype, you know, working with JJ Redick, and JJ Redick was hyping him up. And he was, in interviews, he was talking about how he's being told that he's going to have an expanded role in the team and all this kind of stuff. So he's just been given the green light to fire away. So coming into the season, you were just like, Grimes is, you know, the one to watch. You know, he could be really. And I think I said to you at the start of the season, I said, well, if it doesn't work out, you know, I think, you know, people are going to start getting on Grimes. And, you know, obviously there's the Quickly thing hanging over him, which I don't agree with replacing him. I think it's more likely DiVincenzo would come in if Grimes does get benched. But I didn't think Grimes' starting position anyway was set in stone. I think if he started the season badly, then there would be pressure to replace him in the starting lineup. So, you know, I think, yeah, it's just his defense is obviously keeping him in there, but his defense hasn't even been that great either this season. He's been a real disappointment, and I'm one of his biggest fans. I love him. And I'm totally confident that he's going to turn it around. Maybe, you know, these kind of guys in rookie contracts just, you know, have a down year quite often. I just didn't see it coming into the season. Everything was sounding positive. Everything was sounding like he was just ready to take that next step and take a big leap, you know. But it's really disappointing. I mean, we'll see how the rest of the season goes, but you can see himself. You can see him when he sits down on the bench after coming out. He himself looks really frustrated about how he's playing.
Are you being body language police right now? Is that a thing you're doing, Alex, in 2023?
Well, it's not even body language. Drive. He's sitting down basically going, you can see him almost like swearing and kind of just like really pissed off. Now, usually Grimes is the kind of, you know, the happy guy. You know, you never stop smiling. He's always joking about and looking confident, and you can see he's completely changed at the minute. He just doesn't look confident at all.
I like that. I like players getting frustrated because they can't do things. Definitely. Makes them passionate. I missed a shot. I'm smiling. No. Be mad. Be better. Do a better job. And I like that. Yeah.
Obi didn't show enough fire. He was always joking around and kind of sitting down, just kind of looking like a bit too passive for me, you know. And I was like, I really want to see that fire from Obi, you know, and it just never seemed to come.
Yeah, but it depends on the players as well, how they work. Obviously, they're different players. Mm. You have a guy like, again, RJ Barrett, who, and Josh Randall, who the hell is that? Julius Randall, who gets frustrated and mad when they're not able to do things. And well,
good. Yeah,
that can be both good and bad, but they need to get that energy into being better, like Randall was able to do against the Suns with that amazing third quarter after the first two quarters where he was absolute dog shit as well. But yeah, before we go into the Quentin Grimes, we will get into Grimes. Let's, Alex, what was your good of these 2 weeks, of these six games we just played? What was eye-catching to you in a positive way?
Well, I mean, obviously that comeback against the Heat was amazing. yeah. I've loved this season in general about how, you know, we're taking care of business against these kind of smaller teams. We'll come on to the predictions towards the end, but I've got a sneaky bad feeling about this game tonight. I've been positive all year so far about going into games like this and just, you know, beating the teams that we should be, but something doesn't smell right about this game tonight. I really hope I'm wrong, but that to me has been a massive positive, you know, and that's a step up. You know, when you're a playoff team, that's what you should be doing, and so far we haven't had that kind of that loss, that kind of heartbreaking loss. I mean, we've had a couple of heartbreaking losses, but they're against really good teams. You know, even the Suns played well the other day. You know, got to just hold your hands up sometimes when teams like that beat you, even if they're shorthanded. So, I don't know if I'm allowed to move straight on to my bad thing of the week.
Go ahead. Yeah. I went on a bit of a rant, so I'm. Go ahead. Talk.
No, it's fine. Like my bad of the week is probably going to be a big surprise to you, certainly, in that, like, there's been certainly periods of games and quarters of games where Tibbs is driving me absolutely insane.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
I cannot. But your bad of the week.
I'm going to turn around this round to a positive. But
no, come on, no.
So
give it to me.
Yeah. So let's take that Heat game, right, where that third quarter was just like back to being Fizdale. Like, that was just absolutely horrendous. And the impressive thing to me was, and I mentioned this on Twitter, was the fact that the adjustments that were made, and this is not even a halftime where you have a good period of time to look through stuff and talk about stuff and, you know, really prepare. When we're talking about the end of a quarter where you really just have timeout time to turn, you know, to come into the fourth quarter, the turnaround from the third quarter to the fourth quarter was just spectacular. And, you know, whether you put that on Tibbs, whether Tibbs made adjustments, whether, you know, he's got to motivate the players. If players come in after that third quarter, every head is down, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay. And as a coach, if you can turn a team around to make a comeback like that, then Tibbs deserves all the credit in the world. Do you know that he's managing that situation, and that's in game. It's not like as if, you know, if the Knicks have a terrible game, terrible loss, and then they come back even the next night and turn around and play well. Well, they've had a full night, morning, afternoon to kind of look at tape, make adjustments, and all sorts. Do you know that's just a short time period to go from that shit show of a third quarter to that in the fourth quarter and pull out an amazing comeback win? We've got to give some kind of credit to Tibbs in that situation. But yeah, it's same thing against the Suns. There was periods of time where, you know, clearly the lineup that was out there was not working. And I get the idea of keeping those players out there to try and work it out. Tibbs has always been that kind of keep your best players on the floor, give whatever players are there to win you the game or win you the moment. That's his big mantra. So I get that. But there was just maybe a 5 minute stretch of, come on, this needs to change. Do you know, you need to pull guys out there and just say, this is unacceptable. Get somebody else in, try something different. And it just went way, 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 way too long. But, you know, give them some kind of credit for turning around in the fourth quarter. But that's happened a few times recently, and it's really, really annoying. So, but yeah, this is where we are these days. Do you know, that's where we used to have four quarters like that under Fizdale and other regimes. So now if it's one quarter and then we're coming back to beat a team that was previously in the last year's finals and beat us in the playoffs, then I'll take one shit quarter and an amazing comeback win. Do you know, I'll forget about that third quarter as long as we win. So all about the win. Somebody put a, keep going on a bit as well. But somebody put up a poll on Twitter recently I thought was interesting about, like, do you care about the kind of style of play? Do you care about, you know, playing great basketball, moving the ball and all that kind of stuff? Or the other option was you just win the game. And it's sport is all about winning. I don't care if we have one crap quarter like that, as long as we win the game at the end of the day. So stylistic stuff can come and go. But at the end of the day, as long as you're winning, that's all that matters. That's what sport's all about.
I agree with you when you... it's the thing that's infuriating to me. It's how long does it takes to for tips to adjust or to change things to... and we've seen it so many times, like we do those fake comebacks because basically we adjusted way too late. We made the moves way too late and we couldn't get the comeback done. And if you look again at the game against the Heat, there we won two periods that game. Second period and a fourth period with the second unit that plays with a totally different pace, totally different way of approaching the offense.
Yeah.
And it was clearly not working with the way we were playing with Julius Randle commanding operations. It was clearly not working. And we ran it into the ground. Like he had six turnovers to begin the game. Like really. So if he's struggling, even though he's being able to pass having a few assists, but if he's losing so many balls, so many turnovers, maybe try something different. Especially when you had Emmanuel Quickly and Barrett and Brunson being able to do that with a faster pace. So maybe try it before. And when you're calling timeouts, going well. You called two timeouts in that third quarter and changed nothing out of those timeouts. If it's not working, don't put the same five in over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
It's discussed on Twitter how it's those set rotations he has, and he doesn't change them one bit, doesn't try to do it differently. I mean, I know it's the set rotations. You want these guys to play with the second unit, the first unit, and whatever. But if it's working, imagine RJ Barrett has a good first half, a first quarter with Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle taking the backseat. Maybe run a bit more with RJ Barrett and Brunson and take Randle out first and let him have more minutes with the second unit while the other two are resting. I mean, we can adjust a bit on that. I think we can adjust a bit on that. I don't know how the units would function. I don't know Randle with Josh Hart and Quickly, and it changes the dynamics. I understand, but if it's working, don't change it.
Mm-hmm.
You see a lot after a guy hits a shot. Oh, it's you hit a shot, but the time is up. Get out.
Yeah, I mean it's just not that kind of cool. I don't think anybody's expecting him to change that much. I mean, he has changed. I think in the last year, he's changed quite a bit. You know, the fact of him, you know, playing small ball a lot more with Hart of the four, which is, you could argue as to whether that's working or not. But, you know, that's something I don't think he really would have considered in the past. But, you know, he is making a lot more adjustments in games, but still the basic structure is still exactly what you said there, which is this is my rotations. This has won me games in the past. This has got me, you know, so many wins in the NBA. You know, it's just he's you know, he's at that age now where I don't think he's really going to change that much. So
I think he is what he is.
I mean, it sometimes has its benefits. Do you know, that whole kind of just keeping your best players out there, you know, sometimes they miss five shots, but then they'll go on a run, you know, and if you'd taken him out, you know, they might not have made that comeback. So it's about trusting your players, trusting your best players. And, you know, I don't know, take the example of Randall, for instance. You know, if Randall misses five shots in a row and you take him out, that's his head down. Certain players will just lose all confidence if you lose confidence in them. So his way of thinking is that, well, I have to keep him in, I have to trust him. And Randall sees that and, say, uses that as a motivation to turn things around. So I get it. I totally do. But in the moment, it's just so frustrating, especially when the Knicks have got such a deep team. You know, they do have 10, 11, 12 guys that are good NBA players, you know, so that if something isn't working, I think they've got the players to change it. And they've got more versatile players, as we've talked a lot about in the last week or so, you know, last couple of pods. So I think they do have options there. It's not like everybody can only play one position. We've only got, say, six or seven good players. You know, he has options if he wants to use them. So, that's definitely been
And he clearly now we can see you were talking about before when we grazed over Grimes that IQ was lurking. I think it's like if Grimes comes out of the starting lineup, I don't think it's for Emmanuel quickly. It's clearly sad because when RJ went down with the migraines, Josh Hart played. And Grimes went down, DiVincenzo played. And there was a game where RJ Barrett returned, and DiVincenzo was there with RJ Barrett. So yeah, we know who quickly is going to back up if a guy goes down. It's Jalen Brunson.
Yeah. I think it's purely a ball handling thing. I mean, you bring quickly into the lineup. You've got him, Randall, RJ and Brunson. You know, that's too many people that need the ball to be a success.
Yeah.
If there's an injury to Brunson, then I think you'll see quickly come in. I think it makes more sense if anybody else goes out to just keep quickly in the second unit. You know, we need somebody that can handle the ball and play that position with the second unit. So it's key, and you can see how much the second unit's helped this year.
Yeah, I don't think quickly is as effective as he can be playing off ball. I think he's much better handling the ball than playing off ball, waiting for that, being that spot up shooter is, I don't think, a great quality or the best quality Emmanuel quickly has as a spot up shooter. He gets the ball and doesn't shoot it. He needs to do that sidestep just like Evan Fournier does, which is,
I mean, the
annoying,
only argument,
but.
The only argument I can see for it is that quickly and Brunson play very well together, and clearly
and
trust each other.
What
do you do with the second unit? Who runs the second unit?
Exactly. That's it. It's DiVincenzo. Is it strictly RJ Barrett? Grimes? I don't think so. I like this, and I think it changing quickly into the. There's a problem. It's not only in basketball, but in life. When you're too good at your job, people don't want to move you from that job. Mm-hmm. Emmanuel quickly does a tremendous job with that second unit. And Tibbs, we know how Tibbs is, reluctant Tibbs is. I won't say stubborn. I'll say reluctant to move the units. And unless he absolutely has to move them, he will make the adjustments to get this guy off the first unit or the second or whatever. We saw that for 3 years ago in the COVID season with Derrick Rose and Alfred Payton. And we saw that. And Evan Fournier, he didn't move Fournier as bad as he was playing 2 years ago. He kept Evan Fournier.
Kemba as well. Like, people were crying out for him to get ditched. Yeah. He stuck with Kemba until a point there.
He couldn't until he couldn't anymore.
Really couldn't. Yeah, didn't have any other option.
And played out Alec Burks in the first unit. So I don't know how good that was. Poor Burks, man. Poor Burks. But I lost train of thought. But yeah, it's when you're too good at your job, man, you will be stuck on it, air quotes. Quickly is running the second unit, and we know what works with it. If we change the second unit, I mean, if it's one of our strengths, the second unit, making comebacks and getting leads bigger or keeping leads or getting us back into games. So, and you see the plus, it's a stat I absolutely hate. We know this perfectly, but it's the plus minuses. And you look at the plus minuses, and the second unit looks so much better always.
And RJ Barrett's got the league wide highest plus minus. Did you see that?
Yeah, because he played for the second unit. And he's being amazing with the second unit.
Yeah.
It was. I think it was against the Suns. He was the only at the time. He was the only guy from the starting lineup who had a plus, and he was playing average basketball. So. Yeah. There's the impact there. Obviously, it's with the unit he plays to. So that's why individual stats is kind of idiotic. But you can see that the unit functions well. Why change a unit that functions well? Even if Grimes is not doing amazing with the first unit.
It's not even a Tibbs thing either. I think Tibbs clearly loves Quickly. He said it on many occasions. He trusts him in closing lineups. He's playing 30 plus minutes a game. He could play more, but he's not benched because Tibbs doesn't like him as a player. Do you know, that's the last thing. He just fits so well in that role. If he ends up wanting to be a starter, then, you know, maybe that's a conversation further down the line if he's part of a trade or whatever, but,
It's not looking good for the future for him. As a Nick, as a situation, as the money he might demand or he might want from the Knicks.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's averaging right now 25 minutes per game. So.
All right. That's actually surprising. I thought he was 30 plus.
I mean, there's a few games he plays less. It's Quickly, right? Emmanuel,
Mm-hmm.
Quentin Grimes, by the way, is averaging 24.1.
Yeah, I mean, we did know that there was going to be a squeeze on minutes coming into the season with DiVincenzo coming in. You know, Obi was only on 15 minutes a game, and DiVincenzo was going to be asking for more. What's DiVincenzo's minutes for the season?
DiVincenzo has 20.3.
Right, so there's 5.3 minutes.
Josh Hart is, by the way, Josh Hart, where is he? 28.3. That's the big thing. Right. It's Josh Hart, 28.3. But he's down from last year as well. He's lost. Mm-hmm. He's losing 2 minutes. RJ is averaging 30 minutes as well. So RJ has 30. Bet Randall is averaging more because he's the only power forward. Yeah. This year he's at 34.8, which is down from last year as well.
Remember the time where RJ and Randall were
40 like minutes,
one and two in the league for minutes played.
Well, right now the only player with the most minutes from last season is Jalen Brunson, who his first season last year he had 35. This year he's with 35.3, just not a big leap, but he's the one getting more minutes. Mitchell Robinson, I bet he's getting more minutes this year as well. Yeah, he's averaging the most minutes he averaged in his career with 29.5.
Yeah.
It's Mitchell Robinson, which will tell me that Isaiah Hartenstein's minutes will be dropped. The 2 minutes. The 2 minutes, obviously Mitchell gained 2 minutes, Isaiah Hartenstein lost. So he's averaging 17 minutes. But yeah, it's our rotation. It's there's a lot of mix and match you can do with DiVincenzo and Josh Hart, and with Grimes and Barrett, and Quickly. Those five particularly can swap him around because against the game against the Heat, it was that unit with RJ, Quickly and Brunson who made the comeback possible.
Yeah,
on both ends of the floor, which was tremendous.
Sorry, that audio was that audio was just, you know how when you listen to pods and somebody opens up a browser page, it comes, especially ESPN are bad for it, I think. And yeah, it opens up the audio from some video. All I was looking at was highest minutes per game. So Tyrese Maxey's highest, 38.4.
38.
Yeah. Tibbs. Van Fleet, then Tatum, then Durant. Shaedon Sharpe, fifth highest minutes.
There he goes. There he goes.
Lavine, Young, Trey Young, Mitchell, Grant, DeRozan. I'm just Edwards. So you have to go pretty far down. So Brunson is something like the 14th highest in minutes in the league.
Yeah, 14. So, it's not terrible. I mean, yeah. it's 35 minutes. It's if you're the best player, you should play more minutes.
I think we've also finally lost the Tibbs grinding players into the ground, playing them 48 minutes a game. Do you remember that narrative that used to be? So that seems to have gone.
He has players. He has more players that he trusts.
Yeah, I think he trusts them
more now.
Back a few years ago,
more players to do this. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say he didn't have as many good players back in a few years ago, and he just played his best players. He's all about playing his best players all the time. So now that he has 9-10 guys that he can trust, then yeah, he doesn't have to do that anymore.
Exactly. He trusts them to do the same thing, the wings, and so they can. Let's call it five wings, because Quickly does that, ends up playing the two as well. Out of the five guys we have, they can all play defense right now.
Mm-hmm.
They can all be trusted on defense, and they can all somewhat be trusted on offense.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, maybe Grimes is having a tougher time right now, but all of the other guys can create from the wing, can go from, they can grab the rebound and just go coast to coast. Just something that it quicken that pace. But yeah, it's this. But let's talk about the elephant in the first unit. Let's go back to him. It's Quentin Grimes.
Mm-hmm.
You're a Grimes defender. You're a Grimes guy. Mm-hmm. Do you think a change is needed for him to get something going for him? Or do you think he would benefit from the second unit? We talk about not mixing it up, but do you think he would benefit playing in with that second unit, having a bit of run there just to get himself going?
Agreed with what you said earlier. I think if he does come out, then DiVincenzo is the one that will step in. I still think it's a wait and see with him. It's that defense in the starting unit that is just so important, and having that player that doesn't need the ball, you know, that he can just focus on his defense and be a spot up shooter if he need be. Yes, he can expand his role a bit, but I think at the moment he just needs to focus on his defense, focus on getting that 3-point shot going down. I've said this over the years in this pod that he always feels like his three-point technique is almost flawless, but he does seem to rush it a little bit. Whether that's, you know, that's just him in rhythm, that's how he shoots best, then that's fine. But even if he's wide open, he still kind of goes up early and still seems to rush it a little bit. But, you know, I'm not an NBA shooter, so, you know, that's just my opinion. That's just what I see. Sometimes I feel like he could just take half a second longer. And yeah, while his confidence is not great shooting wise, I think he just needs to focus on what he can control, which is his defense. So that's just incredibly important for this team. You got Randall giving inconsistent defense. RJ, I agree, has been good lately, but is up and down defensive wise. Brunson can be a bit of a traffic cone on defense. So I think Grimes is just playing a vital role. And DiVincenzo, you know, is a capable defender, but again, he's not consistent enough for me, defensive-wise. He can go missing a wee bit. Grimes just gives you that intensity and again, that ability to guard the opponent's best player. So I think we need to stick it out with him a little bit longer and just try and get his confidence up, hopefully. Get him some more open shots, get some of the, you know, the baskets to go down, and yeah, hopefully just get his confidence back up. So to me, he's too important for that starting unit. He fits seamlessly for me, so we just need to get his confidence back up. That seems to be all that's missing.
Yeah, he needs to trust his shot, absolutely. And he needs to keep shooting it. Just throw it up there. It will go down eventually. I mean, it's you know, he has a good three-point shooter. He's a good three-point shooter. He's a catch-and-shoot guy that we need on that team. We have so little catch-and-shoot guys, but we need them, especially when playing with the three guys that we the ball handlers we have, penetration and kicking it out. If you don't shoot it, if you don't make it, the kick out becomes irrelevant. And I think that game when he went down in I think it was against the Hornets, where Dante DiVincenzo played and went for 25 points from that same spot Grimes is in, really damped the perspective the fans had on him. Grimes is averaging 6.8 points, which is we need a bit more from him.
Yeah,
but I will tell you this: we have four guys who are now who you can trust on offense. Brunson, Randall, Quickly. And somewhat now RJ Barrett, guys who want shots and who demand the shots and who, well, deserve the shots they get. So other guys get less shots. And you can see, but then there's different players. And Grimes is a guy who stays more in the corner waiting for his spot. And then there are guys like Dante DiVincenzo and Josh Hart who move and create their shot and appear from that. To do that, to take their shots, and they have more shots and touches than Grimes because they look for those as well. It's a bit stop ball watching so much, and because if the other guys do it, you can do it as well. But I'm looking at Grimes' stats, and what is interesting to me, and do you know what's his free throw percentage?
I'm just trying to even think, is it good or is it bad? It doesn't feel like he's missed a hell of a lot.
Nothing. It's zero. He doesn't take free throws.
Oh, really?
Free throws, 0.0. Free throw attempts, 0.1. He doesn't take, he's not a guy, last year he appeared more going to the line and being able, not many because he averaged 1.4, but he was there. Going to the line in a few games and getting the ball and getting it going to the rim, he's not showing this.
I think I had in my head the two free throws against the Cavs. Remember those two clutch?
Yeah, probably is.
I think I had that in my head.
In 14 games, two free throws. So we need more. And if you look at the 3-point percentages, he is down from last year. Yeah, but. Last year he averaged 38. Well, it was around 38%. This year he's 36%. So it's not a big drop.
No,
you feel it because he was averaging he averaged 11 points, and this year he's averaging 6.8.
Yeah,
and big 2-point attempts. He had 2.7 3-point attempts last year. He's averaging 1.1 this year. So he's doing the exact same thing he did in the first year with the Knicks. He's back to first year Grimes. And you said it, you hit the nail right in the head with the perspective we had and the perception we had with Quentin Grimes, with working with JJ Redick and he was getting a bigger role with the team. And his role has diminished.
Yeah.
And when but you have a guy play Tibbs, with a,
I mean, why would you give somebody like that an expanded role if he's not producing? Yeah. So he needs his confidence.
He's averaging 37% from the field. So it's not tremendous. And again, this will come out as attacking, but it's not. It's when you have RJ Barrett next to you, who's better? I'm not saying he's taking a leap but he's playing better, and he's getting more involved when the team needs him, and he's taking that. Well, he's taking the bigger role, or at least playing to the role we expected of him. That takes away from Grimes. And with the second unit, you have that with Emmanuel Quickley. So he doesn't really have a spot where he can grow into a player with a bigger role on offense. He doesn't have space to do it. And I don't know how we can solve that. What change can we do? Do we settle to Quentin Grimes is that defensive guy who can hit a few threes eventually, or do we think he can have an expanded role?
Yes. If
we think he can have a bigger role, just like we were discussing a few weeks on the pod, on the pod group chat, we're still with Omar, and Omar was saying that he expected Grimes to have a more playmaking role, and he showcased less than last year. So far, in 14 games he played.
Omar knows a bit more about his college career, I remember. And, you know, Grimes did play, you know, a bit of point guard in college. And, you know, he does have that capability. You know, he is capable of cutting to the basket as well. He showed that last year as well. Not really seen that this year as well. So, yeah, something's not quite right with him. I don't know if it's the DiVincenzo coming in. It's maybe upset him. His role a little bit, I don't know.
But he's not doing it with the first unit.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the space to do it.
You know, it's the NBA. There's going to be competition all over the place. If there's going to be players coming in that play your role, it's up to you just to face up to the challenge and take it on. If DiVincenzo's coming in, Grimes is still starting. You know, Tibbs obviously still trusts him. So, you know, there's no need to lose confidence over another guard coming in. So, yeah, he just needs to look at that as another challenge and just take it on and use that as motivation.
Yeah, I don't know how much of it is it. It's because he trained with JJ Redick and he was coming into the season with the high hopes. And him not being able to do it maybe hurt him. I heard his confidence, like you're saying. He needs to adjust and find his rhythm, find his spots, and find his shooting. There are plays he starts the game, he shoots one or two, and if he misses those two, he doesn't shoot at all anymore. Even when he gets the ball in his hands, he just tries to move from it. He needs to be. He needs to shoot. It's the same thing we complained with Josh Hart not shooting the ball, but Josh Hart hits a few threes. I don't know why he simply does not shoot. It was that clip. I think it was really funny. Josh Hart was open and passed the shot, and you can hear Dante DiVincenzo screaming, "Shoot! Please shoot! Like shoot the ball! You're open." So. Yeah, if Grimes had a little bit of the confidence on his shot that RJ Barrett has, even when he's missing, and he had a bit more of Quickley's just trigger happiness, he would be the perfect.
Yeah,
and if he took a little bit of that from both, maybe the three of them will be perfect. No trigger happy, no too much confidence on himself going one against four. And Grimes would be maybe better with it. I don't know. But it's everything. It's a Donovan Mitchell thing when he was supposedly untradeable. Obviously, the untradeable thing was RJ Barrett and Quentin Grimes together going. That was the untradeable part. But he got the label of untradeable, untouchable guy for the Knicks. And so normally people think he's untradeable, according to from the Donovan Mitchell trade. Do you expect more from an untradeable guy?
That should give him confidence as well and motivation as well that the team don't want to trade him, do you know? And yeah, the untouchables thing was a bit overblown, but you know, they still included him in that kind of right, that's too much conversation. So as a player, again in the NBA, you know, trades happen all the time. Teams, if it's the right deal, they will trade you. They won't be sentimental about it. But the fact that the Knicks didn't trade him, I thought would have given him a bit of extra confidence himself. But yeah,
let's hope pressure as well.
Just early season, kind of getting used to new systems, new styles of play. Let's give him a little bit more time.
Yeah, it's science. The kids, it's their kids. They're going to struggle in spaces. So let's just trust the process, trust the thing.
Let's
just
play the kids. Forward. Not heard that for a while.
Play the kids. Yeah, play the kids. It's funny how they wanted to play the kids because they're the young kids, but they want to bench one of the kids to play DiVincenzo, who's only 2 years older or 1 year older than Grimes, which is surprising. Mm. But yeah, he's not one of the kids of our kids. If it's weird. Okay.
Whatever fits the narrative.
With that, oh, it's narrative. Yeah, narrative's everywhere. But with that, there was some speculation with a Knicks potential trade, because obviously there is. Not for a big name or an amazing name this time, but it was a lot of chat about the Knicks trading for Bojan Bogdanović from the Pistons, who are absolutely dreadful again this year. Do you think he would boost our team or 3-point shooting at least? Would you trade for him? The trade I read the most was Evan Fournier and the Detroit protected pick back to Detroit for Bojan Bogdanović.
Yeah, I mean, he's a big name, obviously, number of letters, but I've always liked him as a player. He's a terrible defender. That seems to come with the territory. If he was a great 3-point shooter, which he is, plus he was a good defender, then we would be talking about an all-star and certainly not be able to get him for Fournier and a first round pick. So he could fill in that power forward spot minutes, get a bit more balance to the team. As I said, he's got that 3-point shot. If he's for the right price, I'm all for it. I'm not scared about the age thing. I've said to you many times, I think teams need, you know, a balance. You can't just have young players. I've never understood this. Well, he's not on so-and-so's timeline. It doesn't matter to me. You know, I think a good blend of ages in a team is really important. And yeah, he's a proven scorer. He's consistent, you know. I think he'd be just about right. You know, if the price is what they're quoting, I don't know what the Pistons would want with Fournier, but I guess he has an expiring salary, so and they would get their pick.
That's my thing.
So,
well, they'll get the pick even because it's protected, and they're terrible. Yeah. They won two games this year, and they're gonna get that pick. We'll probably get the second rounder in a few years or whatever if we didn't trade it. The thing is, Bogdanović, Evan Fournier's contract ends this year. That's $18 million off the books. Bogdanović has a contract for next year. $19 million. $20 million this year, $19 million for the next year. Is he worth? And then this ties up with the with the Emmanuel Quickley contract negotiation, because Evan Fournier's money can be put into work with Emmanuel Quickley. $18 million, the cap hit. So I don't know if the Knicks would trade an expiring contract for a contract for next year. Would Bogdanović be much better to the team? Would he be $20 million that much better for the team, basically, for 2 years? That's what he's got left. Obviously, for next year, only $2 million is guaranteed so far. But, you know, would Thibodeau expand the rotation, 10-man rotation again? That's the thing. The 9-man rotation is working well. Would he change that rotation? Because he could have changed it.
Yeah.
The preseason, but he didn't. Yeah. He added two players. One player and Dante DiVincenzo.
And I think McBride is an argument for certainly a few minutes anyway. As a 10th player,
he doesn't have space. Where would he play?
No, I'm just saying he would have argument for just at least being a 10th man. You know, like so.
The 10th man needs to be a power forward. It's not even a conversation. I like, okay, it's fine playing small, but we saw in games, especially against the Timberwolves with the big bodies, that we got destroyed.
Yeah.
I mean, we couldn't handle those big bodies. Gobert and Towns, we couldn't do.
Yeah.
So Mitch is can try and fight it a bit and Hartenstein, but the minute only Hartenstein is there with Josh Hart and RJ Barrett is the bigger guys next to him, it's a loss there and the boards and everything. So we need help there. So I don't know if Bogdanović is the type of guy would help that way, because he wouldn't be fighting for the boards. We need that fight. We need inside, but I would trade that. I don't know if this is a trade I would do. Again, trading a guy out of the rotation and adding someone to the rotation. We know how that works with Tibbs.
Yeah,
Cam Reddish, for example.
Yeah,
I don't know how would function salary wise and everything. It's weird.
I know what you mean. I think that just now thinking about playoffs and how can this player help in the playoffs, and he would help in the playoffs. Do you know?
Yeah.
Just have a bit of a balance to the team, give you some good 3-point shooting. But yeah, I agree. You're also taking out a guy that's not even in rotation and bringing a guy that's going to be needing 20 minutes. You know, where are those 20 minutes coming from? So
exactly.
I think if you're trading for a guy like that, I think it's more likely that you'd be taking out a guy that's in the rotation already. Who that is, I can't even see who that would be, to be honest. I think everybody seems pretty set at the moment. So I can see it from that point of view as well. It just becomes a bit more of a logjam minutes-wise. Player-wise, he's great. You know, he's other than the defense, he's, you know, he'd be a nice fit. So it's a tempter.
It's the thing when I see these trades and these trade machines on Twitter and whatever. It's always the how would that work with the team? How would that work fit wise? We know we traded Knox and a first or a second or whatever it was for Cam Reddish, and he didn't play because of this, that, and the other, the all that story surrounding it. And it's like, haven't we learned how we function, how Tibbs functions? It's not criticizing him. It's just like, why are we doing this to ourselves?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. The 10-man rotation did not work. We changed it. It worked. I don't think he's going back to a 10-man rotation unless he absolutely has to.
Yeah, I agree.
You know? And so I don't know if it ever going to happen. If we don't trade a guy from our rotation to get we trade a guy out of our rotation to get someone else in the rotation. And I don't know if that's happening. It's 15 games in, trading, talking about trades already, it's a bit of a mystery to me. Guys are still getting used to each other because it's 15 games. But, 15 games is enough. No, it's not. It takes more time to trust and everything else. I mean, it's a process. DiVincenzo said it like a week ago. He's still adjusting to playing with RJ Barrett and Emmanuel quickly. He still he knows Josh Hart, but he needs with that adjustment. So people need to chill. And Bogdanovic, I don't think, as much as I like Bogdanovic, he does his job. He was brought to the Pistons with a purpose, and we all said, "Oh, it's a good move for the Pistons, for the young Pistons." But I don't think that's the move.
I don't know. I flip flop on it. I can't quite make up my mind. I mean, as I've said many times, you pick any player out of the NBA, and you can find a reason to not trade for them. Do you know? It's like, there's always a yeah, but with every single trade in the NBA. So I think, you know, eventually they're going to take that gamble and try and move on to somebody like that. But
well, Embiid.
Somebody like that. So they're going to do it eventually. And there's going to be somebody that's going to complain about it. Because as I say, you can complain about any player. So, but yeah, no, somebody like that. To be honest, I say a confident, consistent shooter. I mean, any team could do with that kind of player. So,
they're not easy to come by. Every team wants that. Yeah. So it's Grimes will evolve into that, and we'll be fine.
Yeah.
I came up to you with this topic because it's very interesting what's happening around the NBA. This is not an in-game topic we're about to get into. We're an hour into the podcast, but obviously a longer podcast because we are a week behind, basically. But this Josh Giddey situation, to me, with the allegations about him getting involved with an underage girl, a 15-year-old girl, allegedly. And the Miles Bridges coming back into the NBA after assaulting his wife, girlfriend, getting arrested for it and suspended for I don't know how many days or games it was. Not enough. And Josh Primo as well, and Ja Morant. What is wrong with this new generation of players? Basically, they're getting into trouble, getting into bad things. And why is the NBA allowing these guys to return like it's nothing? Miles Bridges getting standing ovations after his return for beating a woman up. Josh Giddey is investigated for getting it with an underage girl, and he's playing like it's nothing. Josh Primo is suspended, but the Spurs did the right thing to me, letting him go. But he signed with the
Clippers.
With the Clippers. Yeah. That's what the Clippers need, more problems. He's going into therapy, so he's keep therapy to not expose himself, because it's something we normally do. And I mean, on a completely different level, then there's Ja Morant with the gun thing, with the guns, bringing guns into it and into the locker rooms and everything. It's something that's prohibited and frowned upon, not only frowned upon by the NBA, but prohibited. And he got suspended a few games, but he's back and it's like nothing happened. And then you have a guy who was brought up on Twitter, Tyreke Evans, who had issues with drugs and who's got the biggest ban of them all for violating the drug law. And he's out of the league. No one wants him. He's out. He's got no support whatsoever. Every other player has support. I don't get it. It's weird to me. It's not a great look on the NBA because all of these, putting Ja Morant apart from the other guys, because Ja Morant is in a different issue. But having these three guys at least having issues with women underage or exposing themselves or beating them up, and does not look, to me, it does not look good on the NBA, just supporting these players like it was nothing.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the sad truth is that, it's about asset protection. It's trying to say that somebody, bottom of the bench guy starts pulling a gun out and, doesn't just get, released from the team immediately. And,
Gilbert Arenas. Look at the Arenas. He got a whip thrown in the way of the league because he had a gun.
Yeah.
Just like John Moran.
Yeah. I mean, that guy is worth hundreds of millions of dollars to the Grizzlies. That's just asset protection. That's the sad truth. The Giddy one, I'm a wee bit nervous talking about because obviously there's a lot of the information that's out there is just rumors, and I think there's still a lot to come out about that. So I'd like to kind of wait to make an actual comment on that because there's so much flying out there. I mean, it obviously doesn't look good, and if it's as he said, then he deserves everything that's coming to him. So, but the only issue I have with that is, letting him to continue to play while this is all out there. I get that there's an innocent until proven guilty, but there's also let's just take you away from the team for a while, just until this is all sorted out one way or the other. To me, that would be the sensible thing to do. But the one that really riles me up, and actually, no, the Tyreek Evans one you mentioned really angered me as well. As you say, he's been hung out to dry and, and without the proper support, as far as I can see. And that's just a guy that's expendable. They saw an opportunity where they can cut him loose from the roster without too much financial compensation. And again, if he was your all-star player, then you'd be looking at that situation completely differently. You'd be in rehab, you'd be supported, you'd be taking time away from the team and coming back. And, that's just the sad truth, unfortunately. The one that really annoyed me was the Bridges one. So this is not innocent until proven guilty. This is something that he's admitted to. He served his suspension. By all means, that's a suspension the league has. He's free to come back and play in the NBA, whether that's for the Hornets or for another team. That's his right as a player. The thing that just really riled me up was, just as you said, the standing ovation. He's welcomed back as some kind of hero. He's not.
It's ridiculous.
He's a pathetic loser. Even if RJ Barrett or Jalen Brunson did something similar, I wouldn't certainly be giving them a standing ovation as he came back. That's just within my makeup. I could not support somebody who's done that in the spare time, and not just once as well. There's multiple occasions that he's done that. So he's not just snapped and had one incident. It's been two, and in front of his kids as well. So, that's unforgivable to me. Yes, he's allowed to come back into the league and earn a living, but he's certainly not getting
like it was nothing, like it was
any kind of respect or welcome back from me. So, I'm not just saying that as a neutral fan. I'd say if it happened to a Knicks player, I would do exactly the same thing. That's just unacceptable.
Look at it, and we talked about this before we started recording. Just look at the Andrew Bogut's comments, even like saying that I don't know how they knew, but saying that the Oklahoma City Thunder knew about this for a year and did. There are allegations. Oh, but the girl lied about her age. Why does that matter? Does that matter?
You need to be more careful.
I just
feel like there's more information to come out in this. And sure,
obviously there is.
Bogut's put his bit in as well, but I don't know. If they did know about it, yeah, have if they have just swept it under the carpet and tried to make it go away, then yeah, again, that's completely unacceptable. But I think until the kind of full truths come out about this, and if it is a criminal case, which it should be, you know, if it's an underage girl, then yeah, once it's been dealt with by the law, then I think I'll be more comfortable making a comment about it. But yeah, I would certainly suggest a sensible thing for OKC to do would be to suspend him pending investigation. But
we don't know if he's guilty or not. Just saying that other cases around the league, and it doesn't seem like the league cares about it.
Yeah.
And when you're promoting, especially when the NBA is promoting WNBA and everything, sure. It's weird. I mean, how can you do both? If you're a criminal, you made mistakes. Oh, it's a mistake. Yeah, but if you're a criminal, why are we supporting criminals like this?
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird. Like another guy, I was just checking a list. OJ Mayo was hoisted out of the league as well. I don't know if you remember this. That guy, he played many years with the Memphis Grizzlies. He was hoisted out of the league for a drug program. I mean, obviously drugs are an issue, but so is domestic violence.
Yep.
And rape, allegedly. I mean, not rape, but getting with other underage girls. It's like if OKC knew, the league knew as well of these allegations were coming up. So they knew. I don't know why only now did they came up. I don't know how it came up, but it's.
Well, it came out on social media, didn't it? That she, she was posting pictures and videos and things. She seems quite proud of it.
Yeah. Oh, she lied about their age. I mean, he was talking with her brother.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he lied. Andrew Bogut basically said, if she lied about their age, her age, it's her fault. It's basically what he said. So it diminishes what he did.
How the law works.
it's not how the. To me, you're a guy like Josh Giddey, he's an NBA player.
Mm-hmm.
He will attract attention, female attention. He will attract attention. So even like that, you need to be careful. Because, she lied. Doesn't matter. You still did it.
Yep. You still got responsibility. Yep.
Exactly. I mean, she lied. She's a teen. She lied. Yeah, but you're a grown-ass. You're an adult. You're a grown-ass man. Pay attention. Be careful.
Yep.
Not if it's not for you, for her as well.
Yep.
I mean, take responsibility for what you're doing. If you don't know the person that well, I mean, and she looks young, maybe don't do it. I mean, he's 21. Yeah, so he's 21. I get it. If he was 30 and she was 24, it would be okay. But, well, there's 21, 21, either is 15, so it's not okay.
No.
I mean, I don't know. It's not a trying to roast Josh Giddey, because again, innocent until proven guilty. But all these things surrounding the league, it's not a nice look. If you're a good player or one of the top players, you can do whatever. The league will have your back. It's basically what the NBA is transpiring, because money.
Yeah, if you've got a big contract, then the team will do anything for you.
Because of all these guys who done something, only the Spurs let Josh Primo go. Obviously, he's probably the least impactful player of these, but they still made the right thing. He was a bright spot for them, and they, you did what? Get out.
But what if what if it's Wembanyama, though? What would they do then?
We don't know. I wouldn't put my hands on the fire for any of these guys. No. For any man, basically. I mean, it's we know what's happening out there with men. it's just the league doesn't look well here. I don't like the look it gives, and just people trying to push it under the rug. I mean, I don't know. It's we've seen so many cases of people taking advantage. Like, people knew. There's another, a bigger example. It's a well-known documented thing because we know it's true because there was a kid coming from that relationship. It's Karl Malone with the underage women that he has a son with.
Yeah.
So if the son is there, she was underaged.
Yep.
She was underage, and nothing happened. He still played many, many years for the NBA. No one cared. No one. I mean, it's. I don't know. It's money more important than principles? I don't know. Maybe just because I'm not rich. I don't know.
These billionaires and you know, multi-billion-dollar organizations, then yeah, they're all about their money and they're all about protecting their assets. So if you're expendable, then it's a different story to somebody like Karl Malone or Josh Giddey or Miles Bridges, any of these people. So it's just a sad fact of life.
Even with racism, it's the I don't remember his name. The Clipper owner was forced to sell the team for saying the N-word, as he should. But then you have Myers Leonard, who was anti-Semitic and was out of the league for 2 years. He's back, like nothing happened. He's back. He was a racist as well, but he's back. It's okay. So it depends on the player. It depends on the time that has passed. It's a weird look joining Miles Bridges with Josh Giddey. I can't say that this enough. I don't know if you want to add something else to this or not.
Just to say that I was so disappointed in the kind of Charlotte fans, the way they reacted. I don't know if OKC fans are doing the same with Giddey. I've not actually been following that side of things. But yeah, just really disappointed for something that's been proven to have happened, how you can turn around and kind of almost glorify a guy coming back into the fold. You know, I say there's nothing wrong with the guy trying to make a living. If that's within the rules for him to come back and play, that's fine, but it doesn't need glorifying.
It's kind of depends on the rules you break, basically. Well, but yeah, let's wrap this up with the games for this week about the New York Knicks. I know you're not very positive about it, but let's keep it try to keep it positive. We just ended recording in the game. One of the games is about to start the Knicks facing the Hornets. We face the Hornets. We face the Detroit Pistons. We discussed a bit today, and we're facing the Raptors as well. So three games this week. We will have a home and home next week with the Raptors, but we'll try and keep it on schedule for this week and with three games. So these three games again, Alex, Hornets, Pistons, and Raptors. Sorry, what do you think it's going to fare out?
Probably 0-3. I'm just that kind of weak. No, I don't know. I think.
Oh my god!
It's on the road with the Raptors, isn't it?
I think. Yeah, the one with the Raptors is on the road. Yeah, it's.
Never confident playing in Toronto. It's a bit of a kind of bogey fixture for us. Now you would look at those three games and think 3-0 is achievable, but I'm seriously tempted at 1-2. I don't know. I'll be semi positive and go 2-1 then. But I genuinely think that we could drop this game tonight. So
tonight with no LaMelo.
Oh, I didn't know that. That changes things. With no LaMelo. I'll go the one that we drop is in Toronto then, so 2-1. I didn't realize Lamelo
was out. Yeah, he tweaked his ankle again. I think his knee the other night, and
he's been playing.
I don't think they want to force it. Yeah, he's been playing really well, but injuries with the Lamelo the ball kids. So yeah, I think we can go 3-0. Yeah, confident we can go 3-0, beating the Hornets, beating the Pistons. They might feel like trap games, but yeah, beating the Hornets, beating the Pistons, and we've been doing fairly well against good teams. There's a few games, a few rotten tomatoes right there, but we have played well, and so I think we can beat the Raptors. Well, there are two games will come up next week. There's another game with the Raptors, but I think these three, we take them next week. It will be a different story with the West Coast road trip. But yeah, I think we need those three wins, because the West Coast trip will be a nightmare as it is. So yeah,
if we do go 3-0, 12-7 looks pretty nice, doesn't it?
Oh yeah. Just do you want to hear the next couple of games? I don't know if you're seeing this. So after these after the Hornets, Pistons, and Raptors, we have Raptors again. Then we go on the West Coast trip. We face the Jazz. We face the Suns. We face the Clippers. We face the Lakers. And then we come back to New York to play in Brooklyn. And then we play back-to-back games with the Bucks.
That's the Christmas.
Looking forward to that. It's Christmas Day. And last day of the year, we play the Indiana Pacers. So I'm looking forward to that one as well.
That's going to be good. That's going
to
be good.
That will come to the future. But yeah, let's hope it goes well. Let's hope we win these three games, because the next week will be tough. This is a longer episode as we've been doing this season, but again, we slacked off one week, so we're a bit longer. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Thank you everyone to chat with us on Twitter, just nonsense all every game basically. I guess because it's very late and I'm tired while I'm typing, so I type shit. Thank you for following us on Twitter. Thank you for interacting with us. Thank you for following us on Spotify or whatever place where you listen to us. Well, for me, it's a goodbye. See you next week, Alex. See you. We'll talk in a few minutes probably. So, guys, see ya next week.
Yep.
Go next.